up, nerds? It's basketball. Welcome to Horse, a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. My name is Mike Schubert, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, the LeBron James thinking he could get an innocent inbound pass in to the Bulls saying, not today, Junior. It's Adam Amawala. Adam, how's it going?
They didn't actually get to say it to his real junior, Bronny, who was, you know, of course, sitting on the bench. But wow, truly one of the great regular season games I've ever seen. We'll talk about it more in full court press, but, you know, just relishing the rare moment as a Bulls fan where something really fun and truly joyful happens, and I can just appreciate it, even if just for that one night.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So let's get ready to talk about that and other basketball things in full court press. But to get ready for that, we got to go to the Teal Memorial Locker Room, which has replays running of all the stuff, so you don't miss anything.
Oh, that's nice.
All the different TVs are playing all the different things.
Yeah, and they're nice TVs, too. Very thin, very crisp.
Ooh. You know who else is very crisp?
Probably our patrons. They seem crispy.
Our patrons. Yeah, they seem crispy. What does that mean? You decide. But shout out to our crispy patrons, our producer-level patrons, the crispiest of the patrons. Polly Burge, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, bang, bang! Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reid, Steph Curry's long-distance pregame three was a lie, but we love him anyway.
Yeah, before we get to the rest of our patrons, there was a viral video of Steph Curry launching a ball from the tunnel to the other hoop. So we're talking like, I don't know, 140 feet, and it looks like he swishes it. Sadly, we have now seen we've seen the Zapruder film, and the other camera angle reveals that it just hit the net. It did not actually go through the hoop. But nevertheless, I mean, it's still
impressive.
To even be close is absurd. But it was the one time that something miraculous that Steph did was not quite as miraculous as we thought. But, you know, that's okay.
It was a perfect reveal on NBA Reddit because there was the first video of it. Mm-hmm. And then there was a second video of it called like alternate angle of it to prove like, no, this is real, not Photoshopped. And from both of those angles, you couldn't see that it actually didn't go through the rim. And then like 2 days later, there was one called another angle of the full court shot. And I pulled it up and it was from like the other side of the court. And I was like, oh, cool. And I completely fell for it. So shout out to the user who posted it that way very sneakily.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a bunch of people missed it. Like, I'm sure some people are like, oh, I've already seen two clips of this. I don't need to watch another one.
Right,
there's probably people living out there in complete ignorance, which is bliss that Steph didn't actually make it.
But having said all of that, bang!
Hi, Allie, Chase Underulo, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby as a vampire, Chelsea's cousin, Ginger Spurs boy, Balls to the Walls, Mats Fourley, and Utah Jash.
Cool.
You know who is helping out the show, and it's not a lie?
I would say our sponsor, Shaker and Spoon.
It is our sponsor, Shaker and Spoon. Shaker and Spoon is a way for you to up your cocktail game. Go to shakerandspoon.com/horse. You'll get $20 off your first box, and that's about 50% off. They give you all the ingredients and the instructions to make 4 servings of 3 different drinks that all use the same alcohol. You just supply the alcohol. They give you everything else. It's cool. It's fun. It's easy. And it's a fun thing to do for a party or a small get-together. Or if you just want to treat you and yourself or you and your roommate or you and your significant other, lots of different things you can do with it, and you can get your discount at shakerandspoon.com/horse.
Love it.
Now, unless you're listening on Patreon, where you get access to episodes without these dynamically inserted ads, you're going to hear some dynamically inserted ads. And once they're complete, we'll get back into this episode of Horse. Adam, what do you got going on?
All right, let's see if I can do this from memory. If you are listening to this the day that it comes out, I'm sorry, but you missed Minneapolis, and I bet it was a great time. But other stuff I have upcoming on Saturday, April 12th, I will be headlining Next in Line Comedy Club, which is in Philadelphia, PA. So if you're in the Philly area, make sure to come out for that one. And then in May, I'm going to be at Last Best Comedy Club in Bozeman, Montana. I'm doing a couple other like smaller one-nighter sort of gigs in Montana the next couple nights. So on that Saturday, May 31st, I'll be in Helena, not to be confused with Helly, but it is, of course, Helena, Montana. And then on the following night, June 1st, I will be in Townsend, Montana, followed by a week in Las Vegas. I also have Connecticut in September, and then I'm going to be hopping on a bunch more shows with Dane Cook, it looks like. So I believe that will be, to backtrack a little bit, the Golden Nugget in Louisiana on May 16th, some casino of some sort in Tulsa on May 17th, and then possibly some Hard Rock casinos in Florida, and then Rockford, Illinois, and Gary, Indiana, later in the year. Those will be in October and November, but you can check my schedule for all of that. What do you have going on?
I've got the same shows, but they are approaching. So I've got my Midwest run coming in April. I do have an announcement in that Johnny Frolickstein will be joining for the first three shows. So that is Minneapolis, St. Paul, Milwaukee, and Des Moines. The Des Moines show is being live streamed. So no matter where you are, you can attend that one. And that's a half TNO, half Potterless show where I'm going to be beginning the third book in the Heroes of Olympus series. And then for Potterless, doing Harry Potter, Fast and Furious. And that one comes with a 7-day replay. So even if that day and time doesn't work, 7 p.m. Central Time on April 13th, you can watch it later. And then I'll be in Chicago and Columbus and Cleveland. And then in May, I'll be in Montreal and in Buffalo. And then on May 1st, I will be announcing more tour dates for some other shows that I've got coming up in August and September. So stay tuned for that.
Sweet.
That's what's going on right now.
Awesome.
Okay. Now, we do have an MB Q&A, Adam. I believe we do, you've told me.
We do, yeah. It's actually, it's more of a suggestion for a 3-on-3, which we absolutely should do. But because it is April Fool's Day related,
sure,
I do want to read it with the hopes that we will one day do this, but see if we can answer it in a smaller way now. So this is from our old pal, Christine Rodriguez. And Christine says, yo, Mike and Adam, hope you're doing at least okay. Let's be real. Valid. Love the pod as always. Also, Chelsea, my NBA fantasy protege, has clinched her playoff spot and is definitely a contender.
Chelsea's cousin helping out Chelsea.
Love to hear that. She says, something I've always wished the NBA could do was acknowledge April Fool's Day, meaning on April 1st, there would be some sort of funky format. For example, first team to score exactly 69 points wins, players have to shoot granny style, outrageous uniforms, etc. My question is, what are three silly goofs the NBA could do to honor fools of the April variety? Would love to hear what y'all come up with. All right, take care. Thanks for being funny and cool. Hopefully I'll see one of you live sooner than later. We hope so as well. And I'm going to take this one first, if I may.
Sure. I have an idea, but hit me with yours.
I want to see an NBA game where anything inside the arc counts as three and anything outside the arc counts as two.
Chaos. Absolute chaos. That would be interesting. That'd be very, very interesting. Be an old school game for sure.
Also, you can block free throws. You can contest free throws.
Ooh, I enjoy that. I think that's very fun. I would want to see you have a game between whatever teams are playing on April 1st, and you just have them with their normal jerseys, but the colors are of the other team. So if it was like Lakers versus Celtics,
ooh,
the Lakers uniform is green and white, and the Celtics uniform is purple and gold. And like
that
the Knicks are
wrong.
Playing. I know, but that's what would make it
like
funny.
The Knicks and Bulls play, and the Bulls are wearing blue and orange, and the Knicks are wearing red.
Yeah. It would be wild. I mean, because the NBA has done that, right? Like both the Bulls and the Knicks do things or did things in the past where they wore green uniforms on St. Patrick's Day. I always hated it because the Celtics are green and one of our rivals. Bulls, it doesn't feel like you have as much of an anti-Celtics rivalry, so it was more cool. But
I thought you were going a different direction, which is that as a colorblind person, watching green versus red is brutal because they would do that for Christmas.
For me, I don't struggle with it at all. Do you struggle with green and red?
Yeah.
Okay. For me, it's like never, ever, ever been a problem. I struggle with shades of blue and purple.
Mm. Well, hey, violently purple?
Look, it's when it's in that like indigo space, then it's really tough for me. That's where I struggle. But yeah, that would be my suggestion. But yes, that's fun. And look, if we ever have another episode dropping on an April Fool's Day, we'll have to do something. Years and years ago, an episode dropped on April Fool's, and we did an all horse episode actually about horses. So if it happens again, my suggestion would be if we have one falling on April Fool's Day, you and I should do a full baseball episode.
Oh, gosh.
And then make one basketball reference.
That's very, very funny. I love that.
I think that'd be good, but I'd have to consult a calendar to see when that's going to happen again. Because it's happening April Fool's Day. I mean, we're recording this on March 31st. So April Fool's Day is happening on a Tuesday, but the week doesn't line up.
So
we're going to have to wait a while.
It might be some time. Yeah. Especially now that we've switched from, like, we might miss a Monday, April Fool's, now that we switch to Tuesday.
We'll figure it out. Yeah. We'll figure it out. But let's get into Full Court Press. Get it like the news?
I do. And there's so much news.
So much news. So many things. So let's get into it. First up, let's resume discussions of that Bulls wild ending. You want to take us through exactly what went through it since we alluded to it? It's bizarre.
Yeah. So it's a rarity for me to be watching really any sports live when they're at night because I work so much in the evenings. And very fortunately, I just happened to be watching this one when it was happening. The Bulls were playing the Lakers. They were coming off of a matchup where they had actually beaten the Lakers in Los Angeles. And Josh Giddey almost put up a quadruple double, which has only happened four times in the history of the NBA. That's where you get double digits in four different stat categories. It has never been done with steals as the fourth category. So that would have also been a first. It's always been blocks in the past. But All that to say, the Lakers then played the Bulls in Chicago, and it was a very close game the whole way through, and then the Lakers started pulling away, and to start the fourth quarter, the Bulls are down 16 points. At one point, they're down like 18, and they just start whittling away, getting closer and closer. But then, in the waning moments of the game, the Bulls are down 5 points with 12 seconds remaining. They have the ball. A terrible defensive possession from LeBron where he like leaves his man, Patrick Williams, leaving him open. Williams hits a three. Then LeBron gets the ball, inbounds it from underneath the basket. A truly horrific pass, which it was bad. And also J.J. Redick theoretically could have called a timeout.
I but support mainly, him for not doing it because you don't anticipate LeBron making this mistake.
But LeBron just kind of lollygags a pass in that Josh Giddey steals, kicks it to Coby White. Coby White hits a three. Bulls go up by one. The madhouse on Madison is going bonkers. However, Austin Reeves gets essentially a wide open layup. It's a really awful defensive possession from the Bulls. The Lakers go back up by one. There's like 3 seconds left. The Bulls have no timeouts, so they can't advance the ball. So Josh Giddey inbounds the ball. He gets it back. He lets go of a shot from beyond half court. And as soon as it's out of his hands, he like leaves his hand up like in the, you know, gooseneck wrist motion, thinking that it's going to go in. There's an amazing photo of him doing that with LeBron in the background looking very sad. He keeps his hand up the whole way and it goes straight through the net. Complete chaos. I'll tell you what, we're actually going to insert the audio from the Bulls broadcast because it is phenomenal. So here that is.
Shot before that. Here's Reeves. Reeves straight to the cup. Reeves it in to take the lead. Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddey for the win.
Go! Oh my God! I cannot believe this. Elizabeth, I'm coming, baby.
Yeah, Adam Amin and Stacey King, always electric. It was so much fun. And the fact that it was like, you thought they lost it, then you thought they won it, then you thought they lost it again. And then a buzzer beater game-winning three from beyond half court, like genuinely one of the most wild finishes that I can remember. Maybe since that one in Oklahoma City where like SGA hits a big shot and then somebody hits like a full court.
Oh, Devontae Graham from all the way to the other side of the court. But, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it was the kind of, I'm sorry to bring it up, I know they lost the series, go Knicks, but like the Reggie Miller thing where like, hit a three, get a steal, hit another three. And actually, to make a more recent reference, Jalen Brunson and Dante DiVincenzo, like, get a three, get a steal, get a three, and all of a sudden, you go from down five to up one. So, in a season and in a few years where there has not been a whole lot to cheer about as a Bulls fan, it was particularly fun. And the Bulls, weirdly, are playing very well. I don't expect them to do anything come playoff time, but hey, all things being equal, it's nice that they seem motivated and they're, you know, interesting to watch again. So that is the Bull stuff. And we'll, of course, share links to all of that mayhem.
Yeah. Enough basketball. Let's talk about drama. So the Pistons and the Timberwolves, I believe last night at the time of recording, got into a big old brawl. It was a situation where there was just like festering frustrations coming throughout the game. People were chirping. Dante DiVincenzo was chirping at Isaiah Stewart. People were getting mad at Rudy Gobert. There were some technical fouls coming around. And then it all came to a head when Naz Reid of the Timberwolves got fouled. I think hard and on its own, it didn't look that bad. You kind of needed to understand the context of like there was bad blood boiling up until this point in the game.
I agree with the fact that there's bad blood boiling, which is a fun thing to say. And we will share a link. There's a really good thing that kind of shows like all of the context leading up to it, and then it shows the actual fight itself. To me, that was a completely normal foul. Like, it actually is reminiscent of the famous Pistons brawl against the Pacers, where like the actual foul that incited it was not a hard foul. Like, it was the fact that then there was a shove afterwards, and then everything kind of went haywire. But to me, I felt like Naz Reid overreacted in that moment. But I know there was a lot of other stuff like kind of boiling and building up to that point.
Yeah, I don't think it was anything more than just like one of the times people foul someone just so that they don't make the basket. Like, there's no way they are trying to act like it wasn't a foul, but it wasn't like so hard that you would ever consider it a flagrant foul. Like, it was certainly intended so that he would miss the shot.
It's not like someone got like undercut on the way up to the rim or something like that.
No, nothing dangerous or unsportsmanlike, really. But it erupted, and then there was yelling between a couple of different players. What really like elevated it was the beef stew versus Dante DiVincenzo. So it was beef stew versus the big ragu. Yeah. And it was wild because both of these dudes were not involved in the actual play. Isaiah Stewart was like, was he even on the court? Like, was he on the bench when this started? Like, I have no idea what was going on. He was nowhere near the action.
I mean, he's never not going to put himself in the center of this sort of stuff.
That dude is just, like, he's had so many incidents of this that I don't know if the suspensions have come out yet at the time of recording. I don't think they have, but I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a lengthy one because of his, like, repeat offense.
Right.
Because this dude has done these sorts of things a lot, and it is just, like, a funny coincidence that he happens to play for the Pistons, one of the two teams that was in Malice at the Palace. But it kind of spills out into the crowd, like where
coaches got involved.
I think a camera guy was like in the bottom of the scruffle, like where he got pushed.
Because the camera angle, like as it happens, you just see everyone kind of collapse onto the guy. Because there's always someone like sitting underneath the hoop for all those angles. But yeah, dangerous situation.
So like Naz Reid gets pushed down on top of this guy. Dante DiVincenzo's in the mix too. And then like Naz Reid's on the ground and Isaiah Stewart's trying to get at Naz Reid, but like he's all the way on the ground. And then Dante DiVincenzo's there kind of like pushed against people in the crowd. And then Isaiah's like going at Dante as well. There's a fan that's like trying to like keep the peace. There's coaches trying to keep the peace. The refs are trying to keep the peace. Like all the players get in the mix. And then after it sort of breaks up a little bit, Dante like pushes Isaiah Stewart to finally like get him to get away. It kind of does work. Mm-hmm. They back off a little bit. And then Pablo Prigioni, Knicks legend and Timberwolves assistant coach, starts yelling at Isaiah Stewart for escalating this, which I think is valid. But then J.B. Bickerstaff, the coach of the Pistons, starts yelling at Pablo Prigioni for yelling at Isaiah Stewart. So both of those guys get ejected. I believe in all there were 7 ejections, which is wild. 5 players and 2 coaches. And just a ridiculous situation. And then at the halftime interview, there's this guy. Let me see if I can figure out his name. But he is an assistant coach on the Timberwolves, Mike Anori. And, you know, sometimes they'll do interviews with coaches in between quarters or in between halves. Mm-hmm. And what's becoming more and more common is having assistant coaches do this if the real coach like has to, you know, coach the team. And Mike Anori always gives really funny ones. And I guess they've been getting Pablo in recent ones because when they asked him about the fight, Mike Anori goes, Pablo would do anything to get out of a halftime interview.
That's so hilarious.
Just ridiculous. It was absurd. We'll see the full aftermath of the suspension situation, but just wild happening so close to the playoffs as well. Because what if it's so severe that you miss some playoff games, especially if you're the Pistons, you're finally in the playoff picture again. You might miss some games.
I could be wrong. And maybe I'm confusing sports here, which would not be the first time, but I thought that if you got suspended, it would just like kind of pick up in the next season and wouldn't apply to the playoffs. Am I wrong about that? I guess it would depend on what they decide.
I'm not sure because I'm not familiar with the late in the regular season situation. I know if you in a playoff game do something, you get suspended. That's how the Knicks have lost a series because of that. The Suns famously lost that series against the Spurs because of that.
It's how the Cavs won the series because Draymond got suspended.
Right. So probably. I'm not sure. I would think it would go into the playoffs, but I'm really
it should.
Not sure.
I mean, it would be weird to be like, yeah, we're mad at you, but the playoffs are exempt. I don't know.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
But that big old fight happened. Yeah. Other drama is happening around the league, though. The Memphis Grizzlies fired their head coach of Taylor Jenkins. And yes, they did this with just a handful of games left in the season. Like the regular season is going to end in like a week and a half. I think there's like 10 games or something left when they did the firing. And
has something more come out about this? Because when it was released, it felt like almost an Ime Udoka thing where it was like, is this some sort of off the court situation that is inciting this? Were there tensions amongst him and the players? Like, it just doesn't make sense that a playoff team towards the end of a regular season would make a decision like this.
So I looked into it. There was an article on The Athletic written by Sam Amick, Fred Katz, and Joe Varden, who all do a very good job. Fred used to do stuff for the Knicks, and he was awesome. Now he's kind of a general basketball reporter for them. And it seems like this is something that has kind of like been in the works for a while. It seems like another instance of the people who own the team and run the team not liking the coach and just slowly pushing him out. So apparently last offseason, without any sort of approval or input from Taylor Jenkins, the coach, they fired basically all of his assistant coaches and then hired in 6 replacement people. They did consult Taylor Jenkins for the rehires, but when they fired 5 members of his coaching staff, they didn't ask him if this was okay. And normally in the NBA, coaches usually have at least a couple assistant coaches that they always like to work with and they always like to bring in, and they'll kind of follow them from team to team if they are not currently employed somewhere else, or sometimes they'll even leave one team to reunite with a coach somewhere else. Now, of the people that they brought in this new person who is now the interim head coach, Tuomas Iisalo, who is Finnish, so Finland's getting more love, and I have love for Finland. He was brought in, and alongside one of the other new people, Nate LaRoche, they implemented this new motion offense to the Grizzlies. So it was a new offense that is less focused on what they used to do, which was give the ball to Ja Morant, let Ja Morant cook, usually with pick and rolls, and let things happen. A motion offense is much more, like the name states, people are moving, and the ball is moving, and it's a much more democratic offensive system where it's not necessarily centered on one person. You just kind of keep things in motion, and then whoever's open, or if there's a mismatch that presents itself, then you kind of feast on that. And it has been generally working for the Grizzlies in that they are 44-30. They're the 5th seed in the West, a very competitive Western Conference. And certain players have been really thriving, like Jaren Jackson Jr. has come back on top as one of the elite players. He was an all-star. Like, he's playing amazingly. On the flip side, Ja Morant has really been struggling, and he's had injury concerns, and then there's always the question mark of, like, what's going on with Ja? Is there off-the-court stuff? But when he's been playing, he has been playing poorly, and it's no secret that he's been very frustrated with this offensive system because it doesn't just kind of let him cook. So I'm not sure if it is a combination of trying to get Ja to be happy and get the most out of their star, or just like the front office not liking the coach, or both. But it seems like a slow but sure push out. And when they did the firing, the Grizzlies were on a bit of a struggle. Like, they haven't beaten a team over 500 since like the first week of February. So it seems like maybe teams have kind of figured out how to game plan against this motion offense and it's not working anymore. But what's weird is one of those new guys that they brought in to bring in this new offense, Nate LaRoche, he also was fired alongside Jenkins. So it's a very weird situation, but it kind of just seems as if it was a long-standing ownership not liking this coach, slowly but surely push him out. But I think much like the Luka Doncic trade, everyone's like, Taylor Jenkins is a great coach. What are you doing? Kind of like when the Kings got rid of Mike Brown. He'll be a coach as soon as he wants to be, wherever an opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, it's a weird one. And like you said, I think he'll probably get hired pretty soon, you know, if he wants to coach in the NBA or college or wherever he wants to go. As far as Ja Morant is concerned, I feel like it's a real reminder that it is very hard to be elite in this league for an extended period of time. Like, there have been so many players who have come and gone who had this like 1 or 2 year stretch where we were like, oh, this is like the next face of the league. And it makes you appreciate the LeBrons and Kevin Durants of the world who like maintain that level for that period of time. So,
yeah, we'll see what happens, but very interesting. Very, very, very interesting. Now, final thing to wrap it up. There were 2 very good instances of trash talk recently, and obviously we got to cover that on Horse. We love it. So the first one was between George Niang and Quentin Grimes. So Quentin Grimes now on the Sixers. George Niang used to be on the Sixers, and Quentin Grimes has been balling out recently, but hasn't really translated to winning for the Sixers, and it really is just because like a lot of people are hurt, but Quentin Grimes is showing like, put the ball in my hands, I can hoop. But yeah, he was playing pretty well in a game, got fouled, must have been talking trash to George, because while the free throw is about to happen, George is talking to Quentin, and he says, quote, if Joel was here, your ass would be in the corner. Joel here, you're in the corner. Tyrese here, you're in the corner. This coming from George Niang, who, when he was on the Sixers, he lived in the corner. And now on his current team of the Cavs, he's hanging out in the corner. He's good at being hanging out in the corner guy.
Yeah.
Quentin Grimes was arguably not as good as hanging out in the corner guy as he is in this current situation that he's performing under. But I just thought it was really funny because it's true. Like, you're not going to get the ball and be able to run the offense when those 2 guys are healthy and on the court.
I just wouldn't have expected Niang to be the guy who's talking shit.
Yeah.
Like, if it was a star player saying that to him, if it was Donovan Mitchell, it makes more sense. But
I think at one point in the exchange, Niang does say, I'm a role player and I know my role. Like, he fully levels with the situation. And that just, you know, if you're going to do that thing, it's not even like self-deprecating, but it's just like self-awareness. If you have elite self-awareness, people can't make fun of you. Like, if you know everything that the opponent is going to say and you take it out from under them, it's like that scene in 8 Mile where Eminem does all of the things that that guy could say to him in the battle rap, and then the guy has nothing to say. It's like, oh yeah, what are you going to say? And then lays out the full list. It's a good move. It's a good move.
Totally.
Now, there's another piece of trash talk also involving the Cavs, but this time it was when they were playing against the Golden State Warriors. So Jonathan Kuminga is on offense against Caris LeVert, goes up for a shot, gets fouled. Then at the foul line, LeVert tells Kuminga, you ass. And Kuminga replies to LeVert, guard me 101, guard me. And LeVert says, you ass, you know it too. And then Kuminga says, fuck out of here. And then Draymond Green, instigator supreme, comes through to shut it down. He goes over and says to Caris LeVert, you've been traded 7 times.
And then just when you think it's over, Isaiah Stewart comes in from a different stadium and just starts shutting.
He catches a flight. But that's a really funny thing for Draymond to say, because it's not true. Caris LeVert has been traded 4 times, but it's not so wrong
that
the point doesn't come across. Like, it's the perfect amount of hyperbole, because the point is still across, but it's too far to be the correct answer, but not too far to be ridiculous. And it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
It's great. And honestly, there was so much actual trash talk in the NBA that we didn't even have time to get to the LeBron versus Brian Windhorst and Stephen A. Smith.
Oh,
but just
my
go
God.
Online.
We'll get to that in the future. The Windhorst thing is fine. The Stephen A. Smith thing's getting really bad. Like, he's just looking really, really bad with all of that. We can do that in a future one, maybe like when the dust is fully settled of that. But then also there's other stuff, like Dylan Brooks just got ejected for getting heated with Kevin Durant last night. Like, there's been so much chirpiness in the NBA.
Maybe it's ramping it's the up end to the playoffs, year. Man. We're getting there.
I think, like, well, in the West, aside from the top where the Thunder, like, for sure are going to be the one seed, there's a lot of, like, really tight races for all the other spots. And there's all these, like, tiebreaker situations that could come into play. So I think you got to give credit to the NBA for doing the play-in tournament. But, like, it's late March, early April, and there's a lot of meaningful basketball to be played. There's a lot of unmeaningful basketball to be played in that we already have 6 teams eliminated from playoff contention. Yeah. But aside from the super tankers, meaningful basketball's on the menu. So I think that's what's leading to trippiness, and you love it, making the regular season exciting to watch all year.
Hell yeah.
So that's Full Court Press. Now we're going to get into an interview that was really fun. And for all the people clamoring for us to talk about March Madness, this is the closest we'll ever get to doing so. And it was really fun. And you want to tee it up real quick, Adam, before you get into it?
Yeah, yeah. There's a buddy of mine who's a stand-up comic, but he's also a very tall man who was, at one point, very good at basketball. He played in March Madness. He played for both Notre Dame and Boston College. So we had him on the pod to talk about the experience of playing basketball at that level, going to March Madness, all that fun stuff. So I think you folks will enjoy it.
Yes, let's listen to that.
All right. As previously mentioned, we have a very special guest joining us on the pod today. This dude is a hooper, but I know him because he's a very funny comic, also the host of You're an Idiot Pod. We got Alex Dragovich in the house. Alex, how's it going, man?
Hello, guys. Thank you for having me. It's been a long time since I was a hooper, but it's nice to still be considered one. I appreciate that.
I mean, you're still tall. You still make jokes about basketball, whether or not you play it a lot. I don't know. But I bet you're still better than most of us just getting off the couch. So that's something.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, yeah. It's just, the only thing that sucks is last time I played, I like separated my shoulder. So it's like I'm one of those guys now, man.
Well, are you 30 yet or no?
33.
All right, so that's when, 30 is when it begins, when you just get injured all the time. You wake up with injuries, you have to stretch before everything.
I know, it's brutal. It's quite brutal. I'm actually talking to a chiropractor tonight, so we'll see how it goes. I really
Amazing.
Am.
Well, I believe you. So what spurred me on to have you on the podcast is that you had a couple of clips go viral over the weekend, one of which we're gonna play right now.
I got to play in March Madness a couple times, so clearly I've peaked. Even if I have a kid one day and my wife's like, hey, isn't this the best moment of our lives? I'd be like, yeah, it's up there. You know, beat Syracuse when they're number one in the country. Yeah, that baby is not even ranked. Okay, it's not even a top 25 baby. It's not even a 12 seed baby.
Great clip. All right, so talk us through that joke. Obviously, you played in March Madness, which I don't think I know a lot of comedians. Actually, I don't think I know any comedians who can say that.
I know one, and he's on the call.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess a good place to start would be like, talk us through your history with basketball. When did you start playing? Do you come from an athletic family? Like, what's your kind of history in getting good at basketball, basically?
It was pretty immediate, like, when I was growing up. I think I started playing when I was, like, 5 or 6, like, very young. I remember being in, like, first grade, and I could make a left-hand layup, which I didn't really realize at the time, but was quite rare. Like, that was, it was, like, really...
A lot of adult basketball players cannot do that.
Yeah, so. I was, like, weirdly... Yeah, so, but I was... where I got lucky was I had a brother who was 3 years older than me. He was a very athletic dude. So I just kind of followed him and his friends around. So I was playing basketball with, like, kids 3 years older than me for, like, right. I don't know, probably 8, 7, 8, 9 years straight. And so kind of the basketball family. My brother played, I played... my dad played in junior college, and it was just kind of always from there. Yeah, it was pretty immediate because mm-hmm. my brother was pretty good, I was good, and it was kind of nonstop.
And were you pretty tall even as a kid, or did that happen later for you?
Yeah, decently tall. So like I was like 5. I'd say 8th grade. I was like 5'10".
Yeah.
So then I went freshman year of high school, I went from 5'11 to 6'4. And then sophomore, I went from 6'4 to 6'6. And yeah, it was like a pretty, it was just kind of always, I had an odd like upbringing in the sense of like, in terms of like my basketball education. There was a foot doctor who ran a camp, like a camp on weeknights, like Mondays, Wednesdays, and Friday nights. At this middle school, and he was like, at the time he seemed, so I was like 6, 7, 8 years old at the time, he seemed anciently old. He was like probably in his 40s, but like, to me he was like
yeah, exactly.
He was like the oldest guy I'd ever seen. But he was obviously, so this is like in the 90s, late 90s, so his education was from like the 50s or 60s, 70s. So all mm-hmm. We did layups, free throws, and ball handling. And I remember for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, like we never played a game. And I just remember like, and like not many kids were in this game. It's probably like only 9 or 10 of us kids. But like mm-hmm. looking back, I don't know how many kids go from like first grade to sixth grade only doing like ball handling for whatever it is, 6 straight years. And I think that yeah. was like a massive leg up for me, weirdly, because I didn't play.
Yeah, that's huge. Because yeah. I was going to ask, like, usually when you're the tall kid, you yeah. just are the center by default. And then that means that you don't get to develop ball handling skills. But like, did that, by virtue of that dude, do you feel like you had better handles than most people?
Oh, yeah.
When you were playing?
The first time I played in a game was like, I was like in like 5th grade or something like that, or 4th or 5th grade. And I was just like, immediately, like I was already taller than the other kids, but I was like, I was quite advanced just because I was just like, and I was so excited because I hadn't played a game like before. And I was just like, I was just dribbling around for 5 years.
Right.
And I was, and shooting layups and free throws. But like, I didn't even know that that wasn't fun. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I was 8 years old yeah. and just like doing like the most boring drills for 2 straight hours, but just being like, this is basketball, you know?
That reminds me, it's a tangent, but I think some of our nerdy listeners will get it. There's a video game, Stardew Valley. If you play on the PlayStation, it's like one of these games where it has like a big menu. Like most people play on a computer so you can click around. And when I was playing it with my wife, Kelly, we didn't know that if you hit one of the buttons, it like pulls up like a hotkey kind of menu to make it go quicker. We were like literally pausing and like mousing around and everything. And one of our friends comes over and he was like, wait, you've been playing it like this? And you like the game? Like, and then he teaches us like how to do the quick thing. Yeah. And then we become way better at it. But it's a similar thing of like, once the chains are taken off, it's like, oh,
yes,
you've been enjoying the worst version of this. Yeah. It's only up from here.
No, I loved free throws. I loved free throws so much. It was kind of crazy. And but yeah, it helped me immensely. It honestly is kind of, from what I understand now, it's honestly a very European upbringing. Like a lot of these kids in Europe, they play like they practice 5 days a week and they play maybe one or two games, where it's kind of reversed in America now.
So basically you grew up like an Alex, but you trained like a Dragovich.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Cause like it was like one of those things too, where my friends were, I also weirdly knew by like second grade or something like that. Like not many 7 year olds are like, I just want to play basketball, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But I was pretty sure. I was like, this is real. This was so like, I was completely obsessed. So, and that just kind of continued, for my whole career, you know.
Now, how would you describe your game? Like what would be a good comp in terms of like maybe an NBA player for the way that you played?
For the way that I played, I don't think there's anyone even close to how slow I was that plays.
Even slower than Kyle Anderson slow-mo?
Or Jokic?
Yeah, honestly, it's funny too, but I was like a guard. Like I was recruited. Ooh. There's like tape of me, you know, when you want to play in March Madness, like majority of the time I'm out there, our point guard got in foul trouble. I played point guard in the tournament. Like I was a legitimate 6'7" guard, but I was so unbelievably slow. So I remember when I was transferring, a coach was like asking me this, like what NBA player do you see yourself kind of like modeling your game after? And I think I remember at the time, like I think the closest comparison legitimately would be like the poorest man's like Mike Miller in college. Like I was just kind of one of those. I mean, I was just like, I come from a long line of Notre Dame white guys shooting threes, you know. It was like, that's pretty much what I was. Yeah. So it was I was a wing, a three and no D wing.
Okay.
Pretty much.
But not a lot of like post up stuff. I mean, obviously once you get to college, you're undersized, but.
No, I never really played with my back to the basket.
Interesting.
Really ever. It was pretty like, so even when I was in sixth or seventh grade, I was playing on pretty good AAU teams with like guys who were like, I was like probably 5'6" in like sixth or seventh grade. And I remember like our centers were like 5'11" already. And like at that age, I was on like a very like, pretty immediately like on some really good teams in middle school and high school.
Did you grow up in the Chicago area? Because that's where I met you. But where are you from?
Northbrook. Yeah, I'm from the suburbs.
Okay. So were you playing AAU with any guys who have gone on to like play in the league or big college guys or anything like that?
The guys that I played with, you know, a few of them went D1. I played with this kid who was Mr. Basketball in Illinois. He was a year younger, but he played up with us. His name is Chasen Randall. He played at Stanford.
Oh, he was on the Knicks.
Yeah, and he played in the league for a while. So I played with Chasen for like maybe 2 years, but not many other guys in my program were like, they were either mid-level. I played with Joseph Bertrand, who played at Illinois, in terms of like on my AAU teams. In my state, I mean, yeah, not many. Oh, Myers Leonard was also, he played in the NBA, but he was like in my, he played on a different team. But he was in my class in Illinois, and he was a guy that I never really saw him much because he was downstate. But, and also the guys I came up with, like that were around my age, a little bit older, like Derrick Rose, Evan Turner, were guys that were like gods in Chicago. John Shire, were like Patrick Beverly.
Mm-hmm.
Not many leaguers were out of like my class or at least from Illinois, like in between our classes. Anthony Davis was a year younger than me. Mm-hmm.
Damn.
So I saw him on the circuit a little bit. Jabari Parker was a few years younger than me. He was like, I remember him coming up. So that was kind of like what Chicago was looking like when I was.
And it's still, I mean, both inner city and suburbs, it's still a very strong basketball state. I mean, like Matas Buzelis is on the Bulls now, played at Hinsdale, I think, before transferring.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, dude. It's, there's, it's always like, it's just a nonstop factory for great, great ball players. So I was really, that also was like a big thing to come out of there, because like the competition was so stiff, you know.
But I take it, I mean, if you're already playing AAU in middle school, I have to assume by that age, you're already starting to think about like, yeah, I'm going to play in college and I want to play pro. Like, was that the mindset that early on, or when did it become clear to you like, oh, I can actually play at that level?
I think it wasn't until going into my junior year, I got offers from like Colorado, University of Colorado and Utah. Mm-hmm. And once they offered me scholarships, I was like, okay, well, I'll be able to play like at the time it was like the Big 12. I was like, I have an offer to play in the Big 12. I'm at least going to play in some capacity, get my education paid. I'm a Division I player in some capacity. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, you know, after that, I was really gunning for like, I wanted to get looks from like Michigan and like Gonzaga and like Notre Dame and other schools that eventually started to recruit me later on in my, like after my junior year.
Right. And was Notre Dame your top choice, or was there a school that you like wanted to, did you like want to play at University of Illinois, but they didn't look at you, or what was the
deal? I loved U of I, man. I really wanted to go there, as well as, so I think like the dream schools for me were like, weirdly, I thought Florida was really cool. I thought Gonzaga was really cool. I thought Syracuse was really cool. And I thought Notre Dame was, I just grew up watching Notre Dame. I knew those guys really well. And I loved the way that their teams played. And so, I had a really good summer, and, I got some other offers. And then once Coach Bray at Notre Dame was calling me, I was pretty set on going there.
Is there anything you do to try and like reach out to these schools, or is it always just like you're hooping and hoping that they reach out to you?
You play, you know, once you're on these circuits, they come to the big tournaments. So you're just, you're playing in games in front of like 100 college coaches sometimes.
Wow.
Sometimes like I'm going to my junior year, like I kind of shit the bed one tournament where like all these coaches came to see me. I had a lot of kind of hype after my sophomore year, and I just absolutely shit the bed. Like I remember Iowa was like essentially ready to offer me, and I played so bad. They were like, no way. It was like,
do you attribute that to just the pressure getting to you?
I don't know what it was. Our team was not very cohesive. A lot of guys on my team were kind of like trying to get theirs. It was like not a great environment to play in, but I was still developing. My next year, my junior year, I had a really good year. It's strange, man. I like developed very late. Like I like physically, as slow as I was, like I was like slow. And I was like very like under, like I didn't really hit like puberty properly until I was like a junior. So once my junior year happened, I kind of like grew into my body. I felt way more comfortable in my body. I was like dunking a lot more easily.
Yeah, before that it's like you're a baby giraffe kind of, and you're trying to like figure out how your body works.
Yeah, I remember even like, this is like 16 years old, 17, yeah, like going into my junior year, I remember like college scouts being like, he runs weird. Like he runs like a weird, like he's just, he doesn't even look like a college player right now. Because I remember my junior year, the way your body develops, like midway through my junior year, I was like really hooping. I was like really playing my ass off. And a lot of it is just because like my body kind of developed. And then after that, I had a great summer and, commit to Notre Dame, and that was capped off. I had a good high school career, but yeah, it was pretty like intense stuff. Like the team I was playing on, like we were like a Reebok sponsored team. Like they paid for our flights, paid for like our shoes and our gear, and
sweet.
Yeah, like these That's shoe awesome. Companies, they'll like sponsor, they'll have tryouts for like one team, like 10 spots or whatever on a team. And you know, these guys are vetted like throughout the year. So like I was like an all area ish player by my sophomore year, like honorable mention all state. So like I was kind of recruited to be on this team, but yeah, they essentially find like the local all stars and then they have them. Then they have like Chicago's kids play against Philly's kids. They play against Tampa's kids or Orlando's kids, you know, and then these shoe companies basically go there. I witnessed John Wall become a Reebok guy. So like they recruit. So it was the Reebok All-American camp. And I remember we all like were just kind of funneled to this gym in Philadelphia. And it was just like, you're watching. It's like, there's like 200 of us or some shit like that. And I just remember like John Wall, like bawling out. No one really knew him yet, but he was immediately like the best player at the camp. Everyone kind of knew it. And you're watching these like Reebok execs, like just kind of hold his hand the whole time, like kind of just talk to him, like giving him a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And then like he leaves Kentucky like a week after announcing he's eligible for the draft. He's like has like a 5-year, $20 million Reebok deal. And it was like, oh, well, that's what this whole fucking thing is. Like these.
Yeah. They're trying to find that.
Yeah. They're inviting 200 kids, letting college coaches recruit, but they're just being like, let's just go find who's going to make us millions of dollars in the next. They're really doing that camp for one kid, to find two kids maybe.
Wow.
Now,
before we move on to your college days, because obviously we want to hear about March Madness, do you have like a signature game in your, you know, pre-college career? Is there one particular game that stands out or one particular moment of like, you know, a game winner or a game where you just like dropped 50 on some team?
There's a big tournament in they used to be in. This is actually so funny, dude. It's so funny.
Is the footage still out there?
It's like the footage is not still out there. So here it is. So like there used to be this tournament called the Proviso West Holiday Tournament, and it was the best. It was the best Christmas tournament in the country. So like teams from all over the country would come in. The best Illinois teams were playing in it. This is the best. It's like the best. It's like it's the top of the line. The gym is packed from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Standing room only for every single game. When I was there, it was the marquee kind of event of the year for high school basketball. So my team was pretty good. So we got an invite to this tournament each year. And, I had one year, my senior year, I like played out of my mind at this tournament. And even though my team finished fourth place, I won the MVP. And I'm just going to like read off. So because I won MVP and I played in that tournament a few years, they named me to their all decade team.
Okay. Yo, so, that's sick.
So here's some guys. This is so funny, dude. Here's some guys from I'll list off from the 70s, 80s, and 90s and 2000s who are on this all decade team. It's so funny, dude. 70s, you got Mark Aguirre, Doc Rivers, Isaiah Thomas. In the 80s, you have Jeff Hornacek, Marcus Liberty, Michael Finley.
Oh, wow.
And in the 90s, you've got Kevin Garnett, Ronnie Fields, Juwan Howard. And then in the 2000s, the all-tournament teams like John Shire, D. Brown, who played at Illinois, Dimitri McCamey, who played at Illinois, Evan Turner, who played at St. Joe's, and then played at Ohio State. There's 10 guys who are on the 2000s team and also fucking me.
And
Shannon Brown, who also played at Michigan State. Oh, it's like hilarious.
That's a cool claim to fame, though. Regardless of where you rank on the overall list, I mean,
yeah, it's that's just pretty cool. But I remember when they were like they called my parents or something. Then like, yeah, he made like the 50 year all, and he's part of the 50 year all tournament team, and he's on the 2000s all decade team. My mom's like, who else is on this team? And they just name these guys. And you're like, oh my
That's very
fucking
cool.
God, dude. It was crazy.
So that actually kind of leads me to the next question, which is like you commit to Notre Dame. That's where you play, I guess, your freshman and sophomore year. Like once you're in that environment at that level and every other person on that team is also the best guy from their high school.
Yes.
Like what is that like?
It's intense. It's quite intense. And I remember one of the more jarring things I remember is because, like, I was like such a gym rat. I was like so insane, like, because I think because I couldn't really jump. I wasn't really fast. I was just so like obsessed with like drills and like playing. And I realized that like a lot of guys get to that level because they're just fucking awesome. You know, I just remember like some guys that I played with were just like, some guys just like played COD all day and like fucking hung out and like watched, you know, The Office and were just, they got out of bed and they were like amazing at basketball.
Yeah.
And it was, that was probably the most jarring thing about, you know, cause like, you know, when you play in AAU, you play against a lot of these guys that are great. You don't really know them that well. You just assume all these guys are just fucking obsessed and just like, that's all they think about. But like easily, like, you know, half my teammates just like pretty normal dudes, you know, who just like, or the thing that is really interesting to me is guys who normal dude off the court, normal practice routine. But when the lights are on mentally, they've got something on you. They've got something on everyone. Guy I played with, who's now on the Bucks, Pat Connaughton.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was a guy that was like nicest dude ever. He probably worked out as much as anyone, but like not like you wouldn't be like that dude can't leave the gym, you know. Even in practice, he's like, no, this guy's pretty good. 30 games we played, the 30 times. That the arena lights were on, that ESPN's was covering it, that dude balled the fuck out. And I think there's a lot of guys that need that. You need that extra thing. This guy, I also played with Jaron Grant. He was a guy that was like,
oh yeah,
he would like
another Nick.
Yes, he would fucking like, you know, some practices you're like, is he even here? You know, but the second the game, like you put the actual jerseys on, that guys like that who have that, there's something about like the way that they can mentally meet that kind of level or exceed that kind of level is pretty crazy.
Do you feel like you had that once you got on the court, or did you have the opportunity to find out?
I think I was like, fuck man. Like I just think I was always like, I always felt like either subconsciously, it's such a strange mind thing. I always felt like I was at a disadvantage because I was a 6'7" slow guy kind of playing on the perimeter. So I was guarding guys who were like 6'3", a little shorter, much quicker. So I just had to kind of like lie to myself that I was like, oh, that I was athletically like, that I belonged out there or whatever. It's a weird mind trick. I kind of had to be like, you have to put yourself in a pretty weird mental kind of space to, at least I felt that way. And I think sometimes, I remember my problem was mentally I wasn't as strong as some other guys. I remember Coach Bray said one time he pulled me aside when I was at Notre Dame and he was like, I think you want this like too much. I think you want to be good too much. You have to relax and that you'll play better. And I think that was like that kind of helped me. At least that's an insight. That's a coach's insight to what my mind was. I think I was pretty tight, you know?
Interesting.
Well, it's interesting what you say with the like getting there and some people just kind of have it, because it reminds me of like when I went to college for just academics, not athletics.
Yeah.
It's just I was like one of the smartest kids in my high school. Like I was number 5 out of the whole class. And then I got to Rice and like there were these kids who would just like study the night before a test.
Sure.
And like not even try and get 100.
Yeah.
Whereas that I like learned the hard way of like, oh, I was good in high school because I just like worked really hard.
Sure.
And now I'm in a pool of people who are just like way smarter than me. So now I have to work like even harder than I already did just to like tread water here.
I mean, dude, you see it in college in every sense. Do you remember like on your dorm floor, like having like a Super Smash tournament? And like,
and you get cooked,
and like, you're out in round one, and you're like, who are these guys? You know? Do you know what I'm saying? You're like,
it's everything.
In college, you see it in pretty much every capacity. You see that one guy who's like, who can't miss in beer pong, and you're like, where's this guy from?
The best dancer at the public parties.
Dude, you're just like, there's, it's in everything in college. You're just like, I swear to God, like my floor had that Super Smash tournament, and there were some dudes where I'm like, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Where you're just like, these guys were just fucking unreal, dude.
Yeah. So I mean, you get a sense of it. I think, you know, as someone who both did athletics and also like was in musicals, the vibe of a high school musical where like the lead in the high school musical, everyone is like, oh my God, they're going to be on Broadway one day. They're not going to fucking sniff Broadway.
Sure.
These people are not anywhere close to as good as you have to be to play at that level. And I think what you touched on is something really interesting, which is like, it sounds like you had a really strong work ethic. And then you talk about a guy like a Pat Connaughton who didn't have a strong work ethic, but like he had that extra mental edge when he actually got on the court in a big game. And then you have people who are so naturally gifted that you're never going to be able to be as good as what their ceiling is. And I think when you combine those three things, that's like LeBron or Michael Jordan. Like you have to have all of those things at the highest possible level to be someone who's that good, because we've seen it. Like Brian Scalabrine was a quote unquote scrub in the NBA, and he's still so much better than 99.99999% of the world at basketball that people don't seem to realize.
Undeniable.
His quote
that
he always says, that I'm closer to LeBron than you are to me, is the most correct thing. Like I think people don't truly fathom like how good the worst NBA player is.
I mean,
just like obnoxiously good at basketball.
Brian Scalabrine left USC early. He was a first team all conference twice at USC. He left when he was a junior. Like he was fucking unreal. Like that's the guys that I played with at that, you know, it's at that level. It's like that's a real, to be all conference, first team all conference, and you're in a big at a big school like that, you're balling on such a different level, dude. It's crazy.
Now, were you in the tournament just 1 year? Was it multiple years?
Two years. My freshman year, we lost to Florida State. My freshman year, I didn't really play much. So I was mostly just hanging out during that tournament. But sophomore year, we lost to Xavier, and that was a pretty, we lost on a lane violation. It was pretty odd.
In the first round?
So my freshman year, we were a 2 seed. We were one of the best teams in the country, actually.
Wow.
So I was kind of like, that was kind of pretty cool just to be a part of that in some capacity. We were a 2 seed. A lot of people picked us to go to the Final Four. We had Ben Hansbrough, Tim Abomaitis, Scott Martin, Ty Nash. We had some guys who could really fucking play. That team could switch 5 positions. There was 5 guys who could pretty much switch at all time, and also had 4 or 5 guys that could shoot. And it was a pretty special team. But we had, I think we played kind of a sleeping giant in Florida State. Florida State was underperformed all year, but they had some dogs. Like they had some fucking really good players, and they had equal length and just guys. I just think some teams have guys. I remember thinking this and seeing this in the tournament, is that some guys, they just coast. Again, you want to talk about the mental, you want to talk about the different levels of abilities. From my understanding, on the inside, if you want to call it, is that there's some guys that they do whatever bullshit during the year, but once the tournament lights are on, once some guys know that NBA scouts are there, they turn it up to a different level. And I think Florida State had a few NBA players who were just trying to get drafted, and they played their ass off. They beat us by
20. Now, were they a 15 that beat a 2, or this is the second round?
So we beat Akron, who was a 15.
Okay.
And then Florida State was a 10 seed.
Wow.
Florida State upset a 7 seed, played us, and beat us by 20.
Ooh. Wow.
Again, I think they just had guys who were bullshitting all year. And that was something I couldn't really comprehend at that level, because it was just, to even get on the floor and be a 20-minute-a-night role guy you know, shooting a few threes a night. That it like took every ounce of my mental and physical energy to know that some guys were just like, oh yeah, maybe I'll go get 20 tonight and get drafted tomorrow.
Yeah.
You're just like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. Did you play in either of those games your freshman year?
My freshman year, I got in maybe 5 or 6 minutes against Florida State, but nothing like super meaningful now.
Now, which year is the, I'm going to call it your version of the crying Jordan meme. It's a photo that you've shared a number of times of you like on the bench next to your teammate who seems to be actively crying and you just look dejected.
Yes.
Like when is that from?
That was against Xavier. So what happened was we were up 10 with like 3 minutes to go. And what was worse about it was that Lehigh just beat Duke, CJ McCollum's team, beat Duke.
All right.
So we both, us and Xavier both knew whoever was going to win that game was going to play Lehigh, smack Lehigh, and go to the Sweet 16. Like we pretty much knew.
And what were the seeds for you and Xavier?
So we were a 7 seed, Xavier was a 10 seed, and Lehigh was a 15 that beat Duke. And we watched that game and like CJ like went off. But we were like, he's not going to do that twice, not against us. We just knew it. So it was like, whoever won that game, you're going to the Sweet 16. Mm-hmm. And we were up. And then Xavier had a couple really great players. They came back. And then we're down one with like a couple, maybe 8 seconds to go, something like that. Down one. I think it was like a hand check foul. Our point guard goes to the line for a 1-1. As he lets the ball go, he makes the free throw, lane violation on our shooting guard. They call a lane violation on him. Xavier gets the ball. We foul. They make both free throws. We have to like heave it from half court, lose. And it was like, and of course, Xavier plays Lehigh. They beat them by like 35 points. Like it's not even close. Ugh. So it's like, so Xavier goes to the Sweet 16. And that's why when me and that guy, Jack Cooley, are on the bench, he ends up becoming an All Big East player. He was great. We were just like, holy fucking shit, I can't believe this just happened.
I think that's the thing that really makes the stakes, and you've kind of already shared your perspective, but I'd love to hear more of like, it seems like there's so much more that goes into the mindset more than just like it's games. Like even in the NBA, it's like it's the playoffs, you're playing the team, whatever. But I feel like with March Madness, you've got the single elimination element. You've got whatever seed your team is. So if you're a high seed, you're nervous, like, oh no, we're supposed to win. If you're a low seed, you're hungry or like, let's prove them. You're looking at who's on the other side of the next game, like you were just describing. It just feels like the mental stuff becomes way more intense because of all the different potential, and that could really like spook players on the court.
So that's something that like I remember John Shire telling me that once was the like when he was playing at Duke, he came back over the summer like during like a Chicago like pro-am thing, and he was telling me that like before I got to college that like in the tournament like 10 points feels like 20 points. When you're down 10 in the tournament, it feels like 20. And if you're down like 12, it feels like whatever. It's like, it just feel like, you know, all of a sudden
everything's magnified. Basically.
Yeah. Like you look up at the clock and you're like, you're just like, you get a little tighter. And I didn't really understand that until the tournament where you're like, fuck. Like,
it's the famous Chris Webber moment. Like he travels and then calls a time. It's like his body stopped working in that moment.
Yeah, you're playing a normal game, and then all of a sudden, with like 10 minutes to go, you're like, oh, whoa, oh, fuck, what's the score again? Like, this is it. But we were up. That was the thing. It's like, we were like playing our ass off against Xavier, and we're playing well.
Yeah.
And they just started hitting shots, and we were like, oh, shit. And it was like, it would have been, it's so funny. Like, in hindsight, even now, I'm talking about this, however many years later, you do like understand like that it is like it's something that you'll just talk about for like the rest of your it's something you'll have for the rest of your life. So to not make the Sweet 16, you're just like,
yeah. Especially when you feel like it was right there.
Right. It was right there. I mean, we would have smacked Lehigh. There's no I would like there's just no CJ McCollum, the man, great career. We would have smacked him. Wouldn't have been close. It really wouldn't have been close.
Yeah.
So he just played out of his mind against Duke. Like he played out of his mind.
Yeah.
And it was, and that's the thing, like, you know, those guys, those Xavier guys, like I was on a Sweet 16 team. You can say that when you're 65 years old. You can't take that away from him. So yeah, it was.
Now, do you have a couple more minutes? I think we have a couple more questions, and then we'll let you go. But are you good on time, Alex?
Sure.
Mike, you had a good question that I wanted to let you ask, because I was curious to know the answer to.
So a question I had: when you're a player in the tournament, are there strict rules where, like, you can't fill out a bracket? Because it feels like you're getting into Pete Rose territory, to make a baseball reference.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, are they strict? Like, you can't do this.
I can't lie, man. There was, that is my only, like, I don't think we filled out brackets, really. Or I don't think, but like, I will say my only, like, interaction with that is, that was one of the more surreal, especially because, like, when I was playing, like, because I was like a rotational guy, fifth, sixth man on the team, to look at a bracket and be like, holy shit, like, I'm, like, on this team. Like, that's just a moment that I remember where I was looking at it and being like, damn, this is cool. This is so cool. But I, in terms of filling out a bracket, I'm sure there was some compliance person being like, don't do anything.
Right. I've always assumed also that, like, no one does any homework during that period of time. Is that also the case?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Cool. I kind of have a funny,
like, the
story.
Idea that in between, like, you know, the first round and getting to the Sweet 16, you just go back to class and act like everything's normal is like,
I gotta do this group project.
I remember I had a first year professor, philosophy professor, who was just this, like, tough dude, like, kind of a hard ass. And I just remember him being like, the test is next week, you know. It was some midterm or whatever in, like, late February, early March. And I just remember walking up to him, because, like, this was, like, I was used to this at this point. I was like a sophomore. So I was like, you know, very casually went up to him. I was like, hey, like, can you send this to my academic advisor, Pat Holmes? I'll take the test when we're at a tournament, in the Big East tournament. I was like, I'll take the test next week in the hotel. And he was like, what do you mean? I was like, so, like, we're going to New York for the Big East tournament. We take tests on the road in, like, the hotels. And he's like, no, you're not. I'm failing you. If you don't take the test here, you're not passing my class.
You're like, sir, I'm playing at the Garden. Yeah. What do you not understand?
And I just remember being like, oh shit. And, like, I called my academic advisor. I was like, Pat, he'd been there like 20 years at this point. And I was like, I'm going to fail this class. I'm not going to be eligible. Like, what's going on? And he's like, who's this guy? And I was just like, oh, philosophy, like, whatever, 201, whatever. And he's just like, yeah, I'll take care of it. And of course, like, I'm in the hotel, I'm taking the test, like, it's not.
I also think a lot of professors, like, feel some type of way about athletes, and they let that impact the, like, the way they treat people.
It's actually interesting, man. It's interesting, like, so at schools like Boston College and Notre Dame, you know what I think is interesting? You would think, so there's definitely some professors like that, I think, but on the whole, at least from my experience at Notre Dame, teachers loved being a part of the athletic system. And you know, Notre Dame football, especially when I went there, I don't know how it is now. I think it still has the same brand, but the brand of Notre Dame football, even like in the early 2010s, still had some, like, zhuzh to it from, like, the 80s and their 90s teams or whatever. Notre Dame football was like, and sports in general was like very, it was the professors were very cool. Like, they were like, they were hands-on, and like, they knew that, like, there was like a lot of valedictorians in the class who were going to, like, smoke us if they, you know, so they were very, like, they were very lenient and help and, like, super, like, helpful.
That's cool.
You know, they were very helpful. There's always a couple that are not.
Yeah. Now, and we won't take too much time on this, but so you transfer after your sophomore year to BC, spend the last 2 years there. What prompted the transfer, and, like, what was that experience like?
At the end of my sophomore year, we had two fifth year seniors who were eligible for sixth years because of their injuries. Mm-hmm. And they were both at my position. And I was like, if these guys get their sixth years, they're older guys, like, Coach Bray is going to play. I felt like I was getting, the writing on the wall was like, I'm going to get squeezed out of my spot. Mm-hmm. So I went to BC. And essentially my junior year at BC, after I redshirted, I pretty much had the same role where I was like a six-man role player. Ultimately, at either school, both coaches that I played for, my defense kept me from playing as much as I wanted to. It was like I could score at that level, but my feet, I just couldn't stay in front of certain guys. So I was always kind of a role player, six man type guy.
But you don't feel like you got shafted necessarily. Like, you understood why that was the case.
Yeah, man. It's a joke that I try to make work. And it's just an idea that I try to make work is like the idea that like I was good enough to know that I wasn't good enough, you know, like just the idea. The line that I've been thinking about like doing is like, you know, there's so many guys who are like, if coach put me in, I'd be in the NBA, and like, right. Coach put me in and like, it just wasn't for me, you know, it just like wasn't wasn't my bag, dude. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a funny, in hindsight, it's a very funny career to be good enough to have to know that you were just fine. You know?
Well, so, all right, and I got two questions left, and then
yeah,
we're going to
wrap
this up.
You're fine.
Second to last question is exactly what you're just referring to, and I hope this doesn't come off insulting. This is not like between two ferns, but I'm genuinely curious.
True.
As someone who plays basketball at like a, you know, I'm decent amongst comedians. That's like my level of basketball.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered, like, if I was good enough to play in college and someone said, all right, here are your options. You can either play at a Notre Dame or a Boston College or that level of school, but you're pretty much going to ride the bench. You're going to get a few minutes here or there, but largely you're not going to play that much. You're not going to be the guy.
Sure.
Or you can go to a smaller school and be the fucking man, but you're never going to sniff the tournament. You're not going to play at a big program. Like, which
best
one
case scenario,
would you want?
You beat Duke and then you get smacked.
Well, not
Xavier,
even that. Yeah. I'm not even that. I'm saying like a smaller school. So I guess my question ultimately is like, are you happy having had the college career that you did? Or if you could go back and do it over again and be like a star at a smaller program, do you think you would have preferred that?
I think because I've got 2 years of like actually playing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think between my sophomore and junior year, I started like 30 games. So I was like, I was always kind of, whether I was, you know, I wasn't like my freshman, my senior year, I didn't really play much. But I had 2 years of like, I'm out there, you know, like I'm getting in the game, and sometimes I'm playing a lot, sometimes not playing much. But like, I think 2 years of being like a role player. So I would say 1 year I was like it's so funny, man. Like my sophomore and junior year, I started the first like whatever, like 15 games of both of those years, and then just kind of was more. Then I was a backup in the second half. But yeah, I think just to have some games, just to have the 2 years of like being a role guy at that level, you know, if I had like 4 years, like my freshman year or my senior year, if there was like, if I had all 4 years like that, I probably would take being a star at another, at a smaller school.
Yeah.
But dude, it's worth it to me. Like, you know, scoring like, you know, having like putting 9 on Syracuse when they're number 1 in the country, to me is worth like not never having that opportunity. Or, you know, like if you put 9 on Syracuse and they're number 1 in the country and you win, but like, let's say I go to like Sacred Heart and I put 25 on Syracuse, but we lose by 30. It's like, I don't know, I'd rather. It's cooler to me. It was cooler to be at that level,
yeah,
and have some success, you know.
Right. Well, to come full circle and kind of close it out before we let you do your plugs and whatnot. Obviously, so I know you through comedy. I think I found out about the basketball stuff after that, but you're a very funny comic. You as it seems to me, you work very hard, and I'm curious. Like, do you feel like the work ethic that you brought to basketball has helped you in comedy? Because I feel like a lot of people, if you have that in you to be obsessive about something and compulsive and work that hard, you kind of need to find a new thing to funnel that into. Like, do you feel like that's what you've done with comedy?
I think a little bit. I think, sure. I really like the, Yeah, I think in the same way that it's like I enjoyed, you have to find, you have to like learn to enjoy like working at this in a way. There's a lot of not fun parts of stand up, you know?
Sure.
I think that's what basketball helped me with a lot, is that like there's just going to be a lot of days where it's just, where there's a lot of work involved, and it may not feel like you're improving in the way, because isn't that, it's the craziest thing, man. It's like, you don't real, you know, you're doing the, like the payoff is like, is the show or whatever, but like, you can't get any, you know, if you don't write during the day, you know, there's no, you can't just show up and just, you know, some guys can, but it's like, it's that work that you put. I think that correlation. Yeah.
I think there are very few guys in comedy, guys or ladies in comedy, who are the equivalent of like, oh, I'm just going to like play video games all day, and then I'm going to step on stage, and once the lights are on, I'm amazing.
Right.
Like there are some, but to really be great, I think you do need all components of it, probably.
I'm actually interested too. What would you guys rather do? Would you guys rather play at a small school and average 20, or play at like what I did Notre Dame, like an average like 7 or something like that?
I think I'd do what you did.
I would as well. I'm such like, even in like the rec leagues that I play now, like Adam and I play on a couple softball teams together. If there's a game where I get 5 hits and we lose, I'm still angry.
Sure.
If there's a game where I go 0-for-5 but we win, then it's like, hell yeah. Like I'm so focused on the team success. And that makes sense for like when I played basketball, like I was always like a pass first point guard. Like I never cared about how many points I had. I cared about how many assists I had. So like I've always cared more about the team success than the individual stats. Cause you're right. Like you lose the game, who cares that you drop 25?
And I think the mental part of it is really the best. You know, it's like if I averaged 20 at Sacred Heart, there's always that part of me that would have been like, well, what if I transferred and went to like a better school or something like that? It's like
Sacred Heart just catching strays right now.
Yeah. Sacred Heart is just, but it's like, it's a very, but I, now that like, but like when you're at the highest level and you're doing what you can at the highest level, it's like, and again, like I'm going to find the joke for it at some point, but like,
yeah,
but like being able to play at the highest level and not excel is a great thing for me mentally. It's there are so many guys, man, that are just like, this coach held me back. None of my coaches held me back. My coaches were like, loved, my coaches like really thought I could play, you know.
That's cool.
It's so funny, dude.
All right, you ready for this impossible question?
Sure.
I'm gonna give you two offers. Offer number one, you get to film a Netflix special.
Ooh.
Offer number two, we're going to Back to the Future this thing, and you won a national championship at Notre Dame. What's your choice?
Ooh. I think I'll take the Netflix special, man. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'll take
interesting.
Smart choice, because you didn't play during the name, image, and likeness era, so you wouldn't have gotten shit.
Well, it wouldn't even matter. Yeah.
Can't even monetize it.
Yeah,
all right, interesting.
Yeah, I think being a national champ would have been cool, but it's already like, you know, the career that I had, it would have been, I think maybe a couple more points would have been nice here or there, but overall it's like, I feel like I mostly did the college basketball thing. And it's like, I'm so eager to try and get more out of stand up and, you know, this is a very difficult game to advance into. So
yeah, it is. Well, with that in mind, plugs, where can people follow you? What do you want people to check out?
At Alex Drags on Instagram. I would like to, I mean, for whoever's listening along the East Coast, Boston, April 17th or 19th, I'll be at Goof's Comedy Club. So come check me out.
Sweet.
Yeah, this will come out before then. So.
Great. Perfect.
And check out the pod. We'll put a link to that as well.
Please do. This was really fun, guys. Thank you very much.
Dude, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Four Sources, hosted by Adam Amawala and Mike Schuber. Our editor is Kensei Suramaki. The music is by Matina Kapamanas. The art is by Alison Wakeman. The website's by Kelly Schuber. And the social media is by both of the Force Boys.
Thank you to our producer-level patrons, Polly Bird, Self Tortesta, Siobhan Ellsbury, Doka Chasing Taco Falls, Bang, Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed. Steph Curry's long-distance pregame three was a lie, but we love him anyway.
Bong.
Bong. Hi, Allie, Chase Underulo, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby is a vampire, Chelsea's cousin Ginger, Spurs boy, balls to the walls, Mats Hurley, and Utah Jash. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Horse Hoops and on Twitter at Horse_Hoops because...
Horse Hoops was actually also involved in the Grizzlies coaching staff. So when they got fired, the Twitter account got shut down.
And I actually heard that Horse Hoops was traded 8 times. So
yeah, too many times. We got to shut it down.
But you can go to our website, horsehoops.com, for links to some of the fun stuff we talked about today, including the Bulls' wild finish and the spicy brawl.
If you want to support the Horse Boys, you can go to patreon.com/horsehoops. A lot of extra bonus content there. And if you go to horsehoops.com/merch, you can get physical merch like Stuff Nerds, It's Basketball shirts, and digital merch like Stuff Nerds, It's Basketball wallpapers. But we'll conclude this episode by saying something on the count of three, as we always do. This might be our last episode before our softball season's begin.
Oh, yes.
Some good vibes out into our future softball playing seasons.
Yeah, what should we say? I mean, one team is called Gotham Comedy Club, which, frankly, neither you nor I have a whole lot of affiliation with. The other one is a Dog Pound, which I feel like is more, you know, up our alley. So what do we think?
We could bark. Bark on three. Just give a little arfs on three, like we're DMX.
Yeah. And nothing, I mean, many people have told both Shubes and I that we're very similar to DMX.
Yes, I get that a lot. People will stop me on the street.
He's a real DMX type.
Yeah. That's how I get described. All right. 1, 2, 3. It's going to be good. It's going to be a fun season.
I threw in a cat mode just for cat people.
Throw it in.